is, you know, the best solution because it's a single pipe to a single location, as opposed to a whole, you know, myriad of distribution piping throughout the whole service area. So that's why, you know, this is the option that seems to make most sense.
And then, so we're still in the feasibility stage. So the next steps, you know, further evaluation, further consensus building amongst all of the stakeholders involved in the project, identifying the capital project that we'll be building, of course, public outreach, and then design and construction of a project would be the last phase. And I think that's all I had. I can take any questions.
Thank you. Do my colleagues have any questions? Commissioner Collins and then Commissioner Lieberman.
Thank you, Chair Geary. Thank you, Kim. Good presentation. Just a couple questions. What does MGD stand for? Is that millions of gallons per day?
Yes, it does. I apologize for the acronym usage.
That's okay. Language that I'm not yet familiar with.
Sure.
So it's 6 to 12 million gallons a day of potable water that could be put back into the water supply.
Yes.
And I don't know if you know the answer to this. Do you know how much water residents of any particular city or the county use per day that comes out of the reservoir? I'm trying to get a feel for, you know, what that represents in terms of water that would be contributed to the reservoir.
We don't
have an answer to that, just not on the top of our heads. So we'll get that out.
All right, so that would be interesting to know. The other thing was, I know that your timeline didn't put any dates on it. Is there a time frame that you have in mind that this might become a reality? Is it a year? Is it 5 years? What's your thinking on that?
I'll jump into this one, Kim. So as you can imagine, this is a highly political discussion. San Francisco PUC, up until I would say 2 years ago, would not have even considered allowing any water except for Hetch Hetchy water into the Crystal Springs reservoir system. So we've gotten over a big hurdle with PUC on that. That said, you know, there's still a lot of political considerations and logistical or contractual considerations. So I don't anticipate much happening. Certainly design, I wouldn't imagine starting for another 5 years or so.
I'm sorry, your voice cut out. Did you say another 5 years?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner. Thank you, Commissioner Collins. Commissioner Lieberman.
I believe that was probably my hand is up there.
Sorry, Commissioner Addy.
Yeah, the the input of the public is going to be required. In San Diego, it died on the public scaffold. So it's something that is just absolutely critical to engage the public and gain acceptance. And it's actually, it died in San Diego because of a social equity issue, is where the reclaimed water was going ultimately. And so we need to be very, very, very conscious of that aspect of it. The other question I have is, are the studies at this point being funded by us or by the group? How's that happening?
Currently, the studies are funded by the group, the group that were in the circles, or each putting money into it.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Are there any other? Do I see another hand up?
Chair, I have my hand up. That would be great. Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner Lieberman and then Commissioner Collins again.
Thank you. And just very quickly, Teresa, if we had approval to move this along, do you have any sense of what the timing required to actually build all the piping would be? In other words, just trying to get a sense of once we overcome all the political hurdles, is it a 2-year, a 5-year, or a 10-year project?
I would put it in the 2 to 3 year category. It's a large pipe. So, you know, kind of akin to what we're doing with our gravity pipeline.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great. Commissioner Collins?
Yes, thank you. I just had one follow-up question. It was mentioned that there was, you know, it was going to be obviously a cost to it. I'm just wondering if any state funding, if we might be potentially going out for any state or even federal funding to help the project along.
Yeah, absolutely. When we get to that point, well, there funding is going to be critical, and there is a lot of funding out there available. From our standpoint, you know, this project, while it supports and, you know, facilitates our own member agencies, you know, this is a water supply project. So the expectation is that the water purveyors, the PUC, the Cal Water, the BOSCAs, will be putting in the majority or seeking funding for the majority of the project, as opposed to the wastewater agencies. It's kind of, you know, how it's been done in the past, but yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, I don't see any other hands. Thank you for that update.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you, Kim.
And since I requested it, thank you very much. It's very helpful.
Thank you for bringing that forward.
You're welcome.
Okay, moving on to item 6, agenda. Any matters of council interest?
We actually have a presentation for item 5C, which is our financial report.
Okay, I didn't see that in the notes.
Yes, sorry about that.
That's okay.
Forgot to write that in there.
That's okay.
Go ahead, Matt.
Well, we're doing an annual presentation. We wanted to discuss and show the performance of our investment portfolio. You get your normal monthly investment report, which has not changed. It's still around $36-37 million in that portfolio. But in addition to that, we wanted to introduce Leslie Murphy. And Leslie is a principal with PFM, Financial Advisors. We retained PFM several years ago. They have been managing our portfolio. They also assist us with some of the money that we place in a trustee account when we issue debt. So I'll turn it over to Leslie. She'll walk through the annual report and give some flavor for what we've been experiencing over the last year. So with that, Leslie.
Thanks, Matt, and good morning, everyone. Good to be with you all again, albeit virtually. I was asked in the nicest way possible to keep my comments brief today. So with that in mind, Jess, let's go ahead and jump to the next slide. In terms of current market themes on the next page, what we've seen to end the second quarter is generally steady improvement in economic conditions, and that was really driven by vaccine deployment, the reopening of the economy, and strong consumer spending, which was propelled in large part by pent-up consumer demand and large fiscal stimulus. Now, in response to all of that, we have seen a return of inflationary concerns, certainly a departure from where we were 17 or 18 months ago when the concerns were more on the deflationary side of the equation, when the COVID pandemic initially kind of spread across the globe. Now we're looking at some concerns of inflation. For its part, though, the Federal Reserve has consistently maintained that they think that inflationary concerns are largely transitory. Nonetheless, they did accelerate their anticipated timing of interest rate increases, and we'll take a look at that a little bit later. In terms of your investment universe for the reserve funds that we manage for you, what this means is that the yield curve steepened significantly throughout the year and then returned to some normalcy in the high quality bond markets, we're once again in a situation where you'll be getting higher yields for investing out a little bit longer on the yield curve. Moving on to the next page, taking a look at U.S. GDP, largely driven again by the reopening of many U.S. states' economies, as we're shown on the left-hand side of the page. U.S. GDP continues to increase at a pretty consistent and a pretty remarkable clip, as shown on the right. Now, we did get the advanced reading of second quarter U.S. GDP, which came in at 6.5%. Bloomberg is actually forecasting an even higher rate of growth for the third quarter, coming in at 7.1% before trailing off a little bit to 5% growth rate in the fourth quarter. And that's really driven by continued general consumer optimism, strong performance in the stock market, and strong business spending as well. Moving on to the next page. We kind of touched on this earlier, but we do always like to look at the U.S. Treasury yield curve, especially when we're talking about the high quality reserve funds that we manage for you. So as you know, we are constrained by California government code and what we can buy for you in the reserve portfolios that we manage. So really looking at the Treasury yield curve gives us a pretty good proxy for your permissible investment universe. So the blue dotted line shows where we were at pre-pandemic levels. The medium blue solid line shows where we were a year ago, and the darker blue solid line shows where yields were at the end of the second quarter of 2021. So really the takeaway here is that we're not quite back to pre-pandemic levels, but we have seen a return to steepness in the yield curve, meaning that that kind of disciplined duration management and that careful analysis of cash flows and determining which funds we can invest for you longer term, that is going to be paying off in terms of increased earnings expectations. Moving on to the next page, it wouldn't be a fixed income market update if we didn't talk about the Federal Reserve and kind of thinking about what the Federal Reserve is thinking about and looking at moving ahead, because all short and intermediate term yields are really driven by the Fed funds target rate. So the markets pay very close attention to any clues coming out of the Federal Reserve regarding any changes in that overnight Fed funds target rate. So what we're showing here is the Federal Reserve's dot plot. So the way this works is that each member of the Federal Reserve is given a vote of where they think rates should be at a given point in the future. So each of those dots represents an individual committee member's vote. The solid blue line represents the median expectation. So what we're highlighting here is kind of a change in stance by calendar year end 2023. So as recently as March, the Fed was saying, nope, we're still keeping that overnight Fed funds target rate at its current level of 0 to 0.25% all the way through 2023. But we did see a change in stance in June as some of those inflationary fears kind of started to come to the fore. The Fed did change stance a little bit. And now we can see the median expectation is for a quicker timeline, and that they're now expecting potentially 2 rate hikes by the year end 2023. So a slight departure, but the Fed is still preaching transparency, and they are still advocating for a very slow, measured increase in rates when it gets to that. Moving on. Now let's switch gears a little bit and talk more specifically about your investment program. On the next page, regardless of the current economic conditions or outlook or kind of where we are on the in the markets, our objectives for you remain the same, and they do remain bound by your objectives as stated in your investment policy. So our primary objective is to maintain the safety of the investments in your portfolio. We'll look to achieve that by purchasing only high quality instruments, by diversifying, and also by continuously monitoring the creditworthiness of all the securities in your portfolio. Secondarily, we will look to maintain a portfolio that's sufficiently liquid to meet your known and reasonably anticipated cash flow needs. We do that through close and careful cash flow coordination with the authority. We appropriately allocate between short-term and longer-term investments, and we do ensure that all the investments that we purchase for you do have a highly liquid secondary market in case we would need to sell out of anything prior to maturity. And finally, our third objective is to maintain a market rate of return that kind of speaks to that return on investment. We do that through careful duration management and actively trading in your portfolio in order to take advantage of relative value opportunities. Moving on to the next page, kind of taking a look at the funds that we manage for you. Now, we don't manage your day-to-day cash or monies needed for short-term cash needs. Matt and his team manages that. But what we manage are your longer-term reserve funds, which we have allocated in three separate accounts. The first is that operating reserve. That's the shortest in duration, benchmark to the 1 to 3 year U.S. Treasury index. Next, we manage two longer-term reserve funds, the CIP reserve and the Stage 2 capacity reserve. Since these funds are expected to be around longer, we have a little bit more investment flexibility here. And both of those are benchmarked to the 1 to 10 year U.S. Treasury index. So that's really where we're able to kind of take a little bit more advantage of the relative steepness of the yield curve. Moving on to the next page. Taking a look at your aggregate portfolio statistics, as Matt mentioned, total funds invested just shy of $37 million. Also, I think it's interesting to take a look at the year over year change. So the second column from the right compared to where we were last year, you can see we've increased allocation to US Treasuries, for example, decreased allocation to the money market fund. That's really where we've seen value. Looking ahead, we do view that high allocation to US Treasuries as essentially dry powder. If we do see other high quality investment securities that you can buy at better yields, those are easily tradable securities that we can easily redeploy into some of those other sectors. But most importantly, your portfolio does remain in compliance with code and your policy. And you can see we're well within policy limits for each of those sectors. Moving on to the next page. What we're showing here is the maturity distribution of your portfolios. And you can see the maturity distribution reflects our strategy for each of those funds. For the operating reserve, we skew a little bit shorter with most of the funds there into that in that 2 to 3 year area of the curve.